getting you through to midday here on 2SER. Now, these days, any noob can download software tools from the internet and take the hard work out of hacking. These tools are often written by malicious hackers, professional security testers, or hacking enthusiasts looking to increase their productivity. This week, a group of hackers, said that they will auction off stolen surveillance tools to the highest bidder. The tools they are selling were allegedly linked to the US National Security Agency, also known as the NSA. We've got David Vail on the line. David's an expert in privacy and data protection and the co-conveyor of the cyberspace law policy community at UNSW. David, good morning.
Good morning.
That's quite a mouthful there. Now, should we be concerned about the stolen NSA tools that are on the black market, basically that are just for sale to the highest bidder?
The too long don't read answer is yes. We should be quite concerned about this.
Right.
It's actually been raised also in the context of the dispute between the FBI and Apple earlier on this year in relation to an old iPhone that was discovered having been in the possession of a shooter. I think it was San Bernardino.
That's right. Yeah.
And the issue there was that Apple was insisting that security, the personal information security, communications and IT security of the phone was had been designed in. It was paramount, and that they were unwilling to basically provide a back door. And the FBI said, no, you must do this. We've got a warrant. This is a specific investigation. It's nothing to do with that, warrantless, suspicionless mass surveillance that everybody's getting so upset about. This is sort of traditional policing. And if you haven't put in the back door, you must do that. And Apple's argument, and it was that they got a lot of support from the IT industry, was basically that if you put in a back door for the good guys, the bad guys can get in, and it's no longer possible to protect any sort of IT capacity or any sort of IT mechanism, and that the only way of keeping it safe for the, hundreds of millions of users was to do that. Now, with the current hack, the intruders appear to have somehow gotten possession of a whole series of hacking tools that were developed by the NSA, and probably the latest was late 2013, so sometime after the Snowden revelation. So they're not quite current, but there's a very large number of them. So the failure of IT security on the part of the NSA not to keep these away from hackers is major, I think you have to call it.
That's got to be a bit of embarrassing as well, surely, isn't it?
Well, look, the embarrassment is really beside the point. The question is, what does this mean for the rest of us? What does it mean for IT security? And basically, the Snowden leaks demonstrated that one of the most secure, capable entities on the planet couldn't keep their sort of information, their PowerPoints secure. And what this demonstrates is they can't keep their hacking tools secure. Mm. And, for a long time, people have been saying, the advantages with the intruders, whether they're governments, whether they're bad guys, whether they're sort of teenagers or 12-year-olds with a script sort of toy. And what this is, I think it basically proves it. And the argument in relation to the encryption and back doors is basically that Apple was right. Some people are saying that, but in fact, these are now on the loose. These are now in the wild. Anybody on the planet can use them, whether it's other governments, whether it's criminals, whether it's sort of, curious kids. Mm. And so if Apple had succumbed and put in a back door to enable, someone, and typically it would be someone like the NSA that provides assistance, although the other agencies in the US and other agencies in other countries do have their own capabilities. This is basically not necessarily the crown jewels, but everything around the crown jewels. The one thing that is being left aside that you mentioned before, there's a claim that there's some of the really good ones that haven't been released, and they're trying to get an auction. But not many people treat that as a credible
threat.
Offer.
Right, okay. Now, there seems to be, as you're sort of saying, an underground sort of market for these sorts of things. What kind of audience are they targeting? Is it sort of people that want to go against their own governments and selling off to other governments? Is it terrorists? Is it, like you say, the 12-year-old kid in his mum's basement?
Well, I'm not quite sure what you mean by an underground market. This is a sort of an overground market in the first place. So that, you know, these tools were developed apparently, everything points to the story being true, by entities associated with an official government agency. These are the same agencies that have developed the most powerful sort of malware on the planet, the Stuxnet device, or sorry, the malware that wrecked Iran's nuclear centrifuges. And so this is a sort of an above ground industry. It's in a lot of advanced Western countries. There's a lot of work in throughout Europe, through the US, through Israel. There's some in Australia. So in a sense, it's not sort of out the back door. The tools are used to break into. So these are sort of offensive operations to break in, to break through security. What happens is that then occasionally they get lost. They get sort of hacked, and then they're distributed. It could be, you know, there's a lot of curious IT security people who are looking at this stuff and observing that, like a lot of proprietary, closed source software, there's a lot of bugs, and you know, it's not actually very well written, and because no one's really checked it. And so there's curiosity there about the quality, the standards of it. On the other hand, you know, it's pretty devious, it's pretty sophisticated. Obviously, other governments around the world want this because they're thinking this is what's going to be used against us, even just for a, you know, passive defensive purpose. Mm. But also, you know, now that the first shots of the cyber wars have been fired, the preemptive first strike has already happened, you've effectively got an environment where other governments are saying, well, okay, that's the rules. Well, we better sort of catch up to that, so that they will be, I presume, of interest to other, you know, national activities. Then, of course, you've got organised crime, which is a massive, massive, massive undertaking on the internet in a lot of different countries. And these, obviously, they have their own sort of tools, but they're often very, very sophisticated. In some cases, it's the governments that are curious and buy or develop capacities based on what the organized crime gangs are doing, because in some areas they are the most sophisticated. And then there's just everybody else, you know, sort of petty criminals, people just curious, researchers, people wanting to cause a little bit of, you know, minor vandalism.
Yeah.
So in that sense, it's not a single sort of black market where there's this, you know, a bunch of criminals gather around in a smoky pub somewhere.
Yeah.
It's a worldwide, very diverse market for this sort of stuff, and obviously it's going to be distributed very quickly.
That's incredible. Now, how can individuals, us at home, just sort of best protect ourselves against attacks carried out by, you know, one-click hacking programs and other things like this?
That's the problem, that the advantage is with the attackers, with the motivated intruders, whether they're criminals or governments or whatever. One thing I think, you know, you'll find a lot of arguments being made that the proposals to try and weaken and undermine encryption, you know, at a systemic level, at a legal level, sort of in the UK, in the US, a number of other countries, people are saying, oh, if we broke all the encryption, it might make it easier to track down terrorists, for instance.
Yeah.
And that should sort of set aside everything. Some of the more sort of persuasive IT security experts say that there's limits to what you can do there. So they query the actual sort of benefit of that. But the real question is, is that worth undermining the security of everybody? So I think that's a really live debate. And so one thing people can do is get engaged in that and let their representatives, their senators, whatever, know that, personal information security, banking security, commercial security...
are important things.
They're really fundamental. Everything's moved online and, you know, you throw
census
that aside. another thing is basically just to sort of... to think twice, to recognise that no one can now promise to keep your information safe.
Yeah.
that no one can promise to keep the bad guys out. And so that has some implications. You might actually say, I don't want my information collected, I don't want it retained, I don't want it distributed more than is absolutely necessary. It turns out that's what the privacy principles in the international, the OECD model of privacy protection was all about. But governments and businesses have been chipping away and eroding that and trying to use ideas like open data and big data and, you know, information just wants to be free to suggest maybe it's better if we just sort of pool everything together, link it all together, because think of all the extra value, the richness we can get out of that. And so I think another thing that you can do is to be skeptical about those claims, to ask whether they've actually looked at this looming sort of risk, and to, you know, whenever you've got a choice, prefer people, prefer systems, prefer governments, prefer businesses that are really sort of frugal. And so I'm not a booster for Apple, but I've also seen last night that that's an example where they've actually they had to go to a lot of extra effort in their artificial intelligence efforts to learn how people speak and whatever, because they're trying not to actually retain, you know, what you say and what you tell them in their system. So they just retain it on the phone. So that sort of a design that doesn't keep everything up in the cloud, that doesn't send it offshore, that doesn't put it into a big pool, is probably the sort of thing that would help.
Very interesting. David, I could talk to you for a month and just keep asking questions about this sort of stuff. It's stuff that it's not only concerning, but also find it a bit interesting as well, see how these people sort of achieve these things. So David, thank you so much.